This is the Soundcheck Podcast. We're online at soundcheck.org.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's day two of our look back at 2013, the year in music. Today we'll hear more of our favorite live in-studio performances, plus we'll look at the best, the worst, and the weirdest music hype of the year. We'll get to that in a moment. First, let me just say, no hype, New York music ruled the world. Again, in 2013. I know that sounds like I'm just being a typically jug-headed New Yorker, and you're probably saying, hey, Schaefer, you got any proof to back up your boastful and possibly specious claim? To which I reply, what does specious mean? But I do have two more installments in this week's list of the top 10 reasons that New York music ruled the world in 2013. Reason number 8, Questlove. Sorry, Philadelphia, but your guy put down deep roots here in New York this year. The polymath drummer still leads his band, The Roots, every night on Jimmy Fallon's show. But he also found time this year to publish a memoir full of great stories, do a regular DJ gig at Brooklyn Bowl, and he curated a series of high-profile concerts at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Then there's the small matter of Wise Up Ghost, the record he and The Roots did with Elvis Costello. Did I mention his hoodie store and his Manhattan restaurant? Questlove is part of the reason why The Tonight Show is returning to its ancestral home, yes, in New York, when Jimmy Fallon takes over in February. Can I get some help now? Questlove and The Roots, live on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. In a little while, I'll give you number 7 in my year-end list of the top 10 reasons that New York ruled the music world this year. And oh, by the way, have you seen who's ruling the music charts this week?
Baby, kiss me. Before they turn the lights out. Your heart is glowing. I'm crashing into you.
This past Friday, we awoke to find that Beyoncé had dropped an entire new album onto iTunes. For most fans, it was a total surprise due to the complete lack of advanced marketing or traditional promotion, making it something of an outlier in 2013. This year, most of pop music's biggest names and even smaller indie acts released records after calculated, creative, and even mysterious marketing plans to help inspire fan excitement and hopefully boost sales. Now, we here at Soundcheck tracked a lot of these hype and promo cycles throughout the year, and joining me now is Soundcheck's digital producer, Mike Katziff. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
So, was it a good year for much-hyped music?
I mean, I feel like 2013, more than most years, became a year where every big band and like you said, a lot of the smaller acts built this into their rollout plan for every record.
So then what do we make of Beyoncé late in the year and Bowie early in the year doing without any of this?
I mean, I think just the fact of them not doing it is in and of itself hype.
Yeah.
You know, when Bowie dropped his song, or when Beyoncé certainly dropped her entire album, the entire internet and Twitter and everyone all at the same time took notice.
So why do we talk about hype? I mean, why is it so important in today's marketplace?
It's a way to generate interest. It's to get fans excited about music in an era where there aren't really official CD releases anymore. There's no big parties. It makes it an event.
Right. So that sense of fun and excitement that you used to get from, you know, running to the record store to buy the latest CD.
Right.
Nowadays, it's not so exciting to just have 12 new MP3s appear in your iTunes.
Yeah, I think one thing that's very cool is whether it's a gigantic big band or a small band, waking up and finding that there's a new song or a new video or just like a little bit of information, it can get out of control where like the new day's you know, hype is like, here's a track list of songs you never heard of, and that's really boring. But yeah, if it's a video, it can be really cool.
Well, now that sort of gets us to our first case study of hype this year, and that's the band Arcade Fire.
That's right. So Arcade Fire, coming off a big Grammy win for their previous album, The Suburbs, there's a lot of attention now and a lot more eyes on this band than I think ever before, and they have a lot of space now to play. And I would say sometime around late summer, these graffiti tags started showing up in various cities on walls, and there were YouTube videos with like little snippets, little teasers, which people very quickly realized was the Arcade Fire.
But the tag was not Arcade Fire.
No, it was basically like this sort of ornate illustration that employed the word reflector, mm-hmm. and people kind of didn't know what it was, but I think very quickly said, I think this might be the new Arcade Fire record.
And then, of course, there was the Saturday Night Live performance and whatever that was that followed.
Yeah, this totally bizarro, almost public access concert of sorts that was filmed, I think, partially in New York and partially in Montreal as part of these pop-up concerts that they started doing.
Under the name,
The Reflectors, which is this alter ego, sort of their Sasha Fierce or their Chris Gaines or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so I mean, something that big bands have done over the years, mm-hmm. you know, little shows under assumed names. Yeah. You could have heard Arcade Fire playing a song like this under the name The Reflectors if you were hip to what was going on.
To all the breath in the dirt and the fires that burn. And after all this time, and after all the ambulances go, and after all the hangers on, done hanging on in the dead light of the afterglow.
Arcade Fire and the song Afterlife from their album Reflector, which came out this year after a kind of mysterious round of hype, Mike.
Yeah, so these little videos sort of led to, it said, you know, Reflector 99. And on September 9th, that's when they unveiled the lead track Reflector with not just one but two videos. One mm-hmm. was like this cool interactive that kind of let you kind of control the
The lights
yeah. in the video and stuff like that, yeah.
And then another one that was set in Haiti.
In Haiti, yeah. yeah.
So was this a successful bit of hype from Arcade Fire?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think for some people, this really long, months-long lead up to October 29th, which is when the record came out, was just long. It was yeah. it was a lot of like, okay, just give us the record. But I think for a lot of people, it put them in the conversation and you never knew like where another little nugget was going to show up, and I thought that was actually really, really inventive and kind of exciting.
All right, our next case study: Kanye West and the record Yeezus. Did he even need hype for this?
Probably not. I think people were going to pay attention to Kanye West no matter what, but I think Kanye was really interested in having people see him in a new way, and so before all of the other hype that sort of controlled the entire summer and fall and now winter, he started off with this very cool idea, which was to project and debut his brand new video on 66 buildings across the world. Mm-hmm. And then I think later he did it on some more locations, stuff like that. But it was like this very cool art installation, kind of graffiti art mentality way to debut the song New Slaves. And, you know, I think it allowed people to kind of see his music in a, you know, a different light than like this pop artist way.
Right. Now the album got a lot of attention for its sort of industrial aesthetic, you know, very yeah. hard edge. So was he going for that with the art installation idea as well?
I think everything that he did visually, audio-wise, all kind of seemed to be of a piece. He's very much operating in this world where everything he puts out is his vision. And these videos that debuted like up on the screen, it kind of created like this kind of community event sort of thing. It was a little bit more of like a punk aesthetic to his music.
So it's like a little pop-up art thing on the side of a building in 66 places around the world for this song called New Slaves from Kanye West.
My mama was raised in the era when clean water was only served to the fairer skin. Doing clothes, you would have thought I had help, but they wasn't satisfied unless I picked the cotton myself. You see, it's broke, race him, that's that, don't touch anything in the stove. And it's rich, race him, that's that, come in, please buy more. What you want, a Bentley, fur coat, a diamond chain? All you blacks want all the same thing. Used to only be everybody playing. Spending anything on Alexander Wang, new slaves.
That is Kanye West, New Slaves, from his album Yeezus. The song was debuted, as digital producer Mike Katzeff is telling us, by projecting the video onto the side of 66 different buildings around the world. So, Mike, that's a very creative use of hype. Was it effective?
It's hard to know. If someone like Kanye is going to grab everyone's attention immediately, and he kind of won't let go. As this year has proven, he's shown up in all sorts of places in every different way. And kind of people, I think, are getting a little fed up maybe at this point. He's sort of burned a little bit of his goodwill. But at the same time, something like this certainly allows the art to sort of be in and of itself. And I think, you know, ultimately the music, to me at least, holds up enough. You know, it's a record.
So it delivered the goods.
I think so.
What about the good old-fashioned, cycle of hype where it's driven by a good band with good songs?
I think that's sort of something that isn't necessarily considered hype anymore. But in a lot of ways, this year saw bands like Haim, Churches, Lord.
Haim, the trio of sisters from L.A.,
Churches is a Glasgow synth-pop trio, and Lord is the New Zealand singer. She's 17 years old and dropped
huge
this hit mega hit
Royals.
We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It's the one in our blood. That kind of love's just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz.
All of them, the hype machine was sort of driven by the music as opposed to marketing forces, would you say?
All of them sort of had labels backing them behind it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they had really great singles that caught people's ears. They had performances at places like CMJ and South by Southwest. And by the time they hit places like New York, they were already selling out major venues before sometimes even the record had even come out yet, and people knew all the songs.
Right. Sort of like those old stories about the Beatles coming to cities in New York or cities in the United States and finding people knew all the words to their songs. So this is hype the old-fashioned way. What should we hear? What's a good example?
Let's listen to The Wire by Haim.
You know I'm bad at communication. It's the hardest thing for me to do, and it's the most important part that relationships will go through. And I give it up. That I know that you're gonna be okay anyway. You know there's no rhyme or reason for the way it turned out to be. I didn't go and try to change my mind, not intentionally. I know it's hard to hear me say it, but I can't bear to stay. And I just know that you're gonna be okay anyway. Always keep your heart locked tight. Don't let your mind rebel.
The Wire, single from the L.A. trio Haim. Three sisters performed here in our Soundcheck studio. You can hear that on our archives, soundcheck.org. Digital producer Mike Katzeff here with us in the Soundcheck studio looking at some of the best or at least some of the most interesting music hype of 2013. Did the hype cycle work for Haim?
I would say so. I think this was a band that maybe before South by Southwest this year, they were not on anybody's radar. And based on the demand of people trying to get into these shows and not being able to, myself included, I tried many times to go see them. By the time they came to New York or to other places, they had this following based on the song The Wire and based on a song called Falling. And that was kind of it. People hadn't heard the record till September, basically. And they were already pretty well known and gigantic, at least in terms of, you know, this sort of indie mainstream world.
Okay. Now, when we come to Jay-Z and his album, Magna Carta Holy Grail, the hype became news.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
He, in true Jay-Z fashion, announces this new record, his 12th, which had been sort of many years delayed at this point, in the middle of the NBA playoffs through like this 3-minute commercial that was almost shot like a documentary, so people weren't totally sure what it was at first. Turns out it's for a Samsung Galaxy, like the phone.
Mm-hmm.
More or less, they announced this new record, which is part of a deal where the first 1 million subscribers to download an app could get this record.
Right.
If you were, you know, a Samsung user.
So that, I mean, yes, it's traditional in that it's big corporations at work, but this kind of partnership with Samsung, that seems really unusual.
Samsung had bought 1 million copies of this record before it had come out. It was just very different, but it didn't really help him either.
Yeah. Well, why is that? Why did the hype become news?
I think for two reasons. One, it was disappointing that someone of his stature would maybe do something as kind of commercial and, you know, as this, though he's certainly had promotional things in the past. As it turns out, when this app came out and people started using it, they found out that there was software within the app that was data mining their phones and reporting back to Samsung. So people were not happy about that. Secondly, the album itself, which is maybe the greater sin, the album wasn't very good.
All right. Let's hear Oceans featuring Frank Ocean from Jay-Z's record Magna Carta Holy Grail.
Like Pablo and Papa, winding dirt roads or mopeds, spilling opus. Welcome to the magnum opus, the Magna Carta, the best son of the Dakota. Yeah. On a holiday playing strange fruit. From a maker to a Billy, I can't take the same route. Swoosh, that's the sound of the border. Swoosh, and that's the sound of a baller. Muhammad Hovi, my back against the rope. The black made back, I'm back inside the boat. Shepherd's Ferry, they finally gave me some hope. Can't believe they got it, the vote. Democrat, nope, so dope. The troubled waters had to learn how to float. On the ocean, I'm in heaven. Yacht, Ocean 11.
Elephant house on the bow of a sailing lady. Docked on the Ivory Coast. Mercedes in a row, winding down the road. I hope my black skin don't dirt this white tuxedo before the bus got sure. And if so.
That is Jay-Z featuring Frank Ocean with the song called Oceans from his album Magna Carta Holy Grail. Much hyped this year. Mike, did the hype deliver the goods?
I'm going to say no. It was so much talk about this thing, but when the album finally came out, whatever buildup that they had been trying to generate just didn't work when the record just was very mediocre.
Well, you know, it's funny. You played a little bit of New Slaves for us from the Kanye West record a moment ago. And, you know, thematically, the two songs are very closely related. Mm-hmm. They're talking about a lot of the same stuff. But one sort of seen as artistic and, you know, edgy, and the other seen as business as usual.
Yeah.
All right. So we're talking about the best, the worst, the weirdest music hype of 2013, Boards of Canada. This is a band that many of our listeners will not be familiar with. Scottish electronic duo. They've had a number of records out over the years. What did they do this year?
So Boards of Canada had not put out a record since 2006. A lot of people kind of, for the most part, thought they were, if not dormant, then just on hiatus, if not broken up. Starting on Record Store Day, people had no idea that there was necessarily a record coming out. But on Record Store Day,
that's like the third Saturday in April, right?
Sometime in April, right?
Yeah.
Where people usually go to the record stores and buy special 7 inches and things like that. So this special 12-inch record showed up that was sort of unmarked. Between that and then in other outlets, websites, radio shows, things like that, these weird audio transmissions started popping up.
That's weird.
It's very weird. And so
what are the numbers?
Every of these six different audio snippets had its own sequence of six numbers. And ultimately, what people figured out was when you added them up in a specific order, it led to a website password for Boards of Canada's brand new website that they announced.
And how did anybody figure this out?
I think part of it is the internet allows people to sort of have this groupthink where everyone can kind of talk about it together and parse it out. When people typed in this series of numbers, it led to a new music video and kind of details about their fourth record.
Did it deliver?
I would say it delivered. I think this is a band that had not been on anybody's radar for a long time, and it certainly just generated like this weird buzz. It fit with the spirit of the music. It fit with their aesthetic and their mystery and their elusiveness.
All right. Well, here's a little bit from Boards of Canada from their 2013 album Tomorrow's Harvest. We've been looking at the year in music hype with Soundcheck Digital producer Mike Katziff. Mike, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Reach for the Dead is the name of this song from Boards of Canada from their album Tomorrow's Harvest, arriving after a very mysterious hype cycle from them. Coming up in a moment, I'll give you another reason from my top 10 list for 2013, 10 reasons why New York ruled the music world this year. Also, more of our favorite live performances in studio from 2013, all of that still to come. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. I didn't want to do a regular top 10 list this year, so instead, as you may know, I came up with the top 10 reasons that New York ruled the music world in 2013, and it is time now for reason number 7. Number 7, Caroline Shaw wins the Pulitzer Prize. The New York singer, violinist, and composer topped my top 10 list when I did make one last year in 2012 with her astonishing vocal piece called Partita. So when she was announced in March as the winner of the 2013 Pulitzer Prize in Music, I wasn't shocked, but I was surprised. Caroline was 30, making her by far the youngest composer to ever win the award. And this fall, she and the vocal group that she's part of, called Roomful of Teeth, finally performed the work live. Music from this year's Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, Caroline Shaw. In fact, that's an excerpt of the piece that won the prize for her, called Partita, performed by the vocal group Roomful of Teeth, which includes Caroline as one of the eight singers, and that recording made live at Brookfield Place, part of WNYC's New Sounds Live concert series. Tomorrow, two more reasons as we continue to count down my top 10 list for the end of the year. Why New York music ruled the world in 2013. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, and Mike Katziff with Amy Pearl. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.